stories about memorable things that left an impression on him as a kid. And I was reading about one of these the other night in the chapter we were reading that was about an impression that was left on Rael Dahl about religion and about God. He describes some harsh treatment that he and other kids suffered at the hands of their school headmaster, who was also a religious figure, a prominent religious figure, apparently. And Rael Dahl talks about him being left rather confused by the mixed messages that he was receiving from this particular man from his childhood. He writes, "I would sit in the dim light of the school chapel and listen to him preaching about the Lamb of God and about mercy and about forgiveness and all the rest of it. My young mind would become totally confused. I knew very well that only the night before this preacher had shown neither forgiveness nor mercy in flogging some small boy who had broken the rules." He goes on to say further on in the chapter, at the end of the chapter, about the impression that was left on him by this man. He says, "It was all this, I think, that made me begin to have doubts about religion and even about God. If this person, I kept telling myself, was one of God's salesmen on earth, then there must be something very wrong about the whole business." A bit sad, isn't it? But it's also something I'm sure is very real for a lot of people's experience and their dealings with certain religious people around the place. The Apostle Paul says something a bit further on from the passage that Christine just read for us that says something along the lines of that it's often the religious people who are the ones giving God a bad name in the world. We're going to begin a new series this morning in Romans, and I'll talk a little bit about the opening of this letter in a moment. But I want to begin this series today looking at the message that we're bringing to the world around us, to the people around us who we might be interacting with throughout our weeks, because we are the people of God, whether we think about it or not, we are all speaking some sort of message to the people around us as we interact with them throughout the weeks. And the message you're speaking, that we're all speaking throughout the week, is more powerful and is likely to be leaving more of an impression on people than any sort of message I might be able to deliver up here on a Sunday morning. In a week or two's time, most of you probably won't even remember what I talked about today. But I'm sure there'll be people that you come across during your week who will be left with some form of an impression by the way that you've interacted with them. And if they, particularly if they know that you're some former religious person, that I'm sure they'll be even more attentive to see what you're saying to them about God by how you treat them or how you come across. And I don't mean preaching at people either. Rael Dahl's old headmaster, in his story there, seemed to have left more of an impression on him regarding God, more with his beatings than he did with his preaching in his experience. So what's the message people see and hear in us, or hear us speaking about God as we interact with them throughout our weeks? So it's a question worth considering, I believe, because as I've titled the sermon this morning, it's our message that is our mission in the world in that way. Our task or our mission as God's people in the world is to be revealing the wonder of God to the people around us. It's a huge responsibility, and it might seem a bit overwhelming sometimes to us, but something I want to suggest to us this morning, and something I hope might serve as an encouragement for us, is to rest more on God and experience more of Him. Is that our mission or our message that we're speaking to the world around us? Rather than being a burdensome task that we need to be really trying hard in the world, I reckon it need not be more than simply an expression of our experience with God. And I think that's a good thing. I think it's a good thing if our call to mission is as much for us a call back to God and to stay close to Him as much as anything else. So this letter to the Romans that we're going to look at for the next couple of months, it's obviously written by the Apostle Paul before an intended visit by him to the churches around Rome. And from the very beginning of this letter, Paul, he expresses with great enthusiasm his passion for spreading this message about God that God has revealed to him through Jesus, which he believes has the power to change lives. This passion of Paul's comes from his own experience of God's life-changing power. There's a story, obviously, in Acts about Paul's change of life and how that happened. And Paul's change of life wasn't like we'd usually imagine for someone coming to God, generally, in our context. Paul's wasn't a change of lifestyle from some sort of wayward lifestyle into coming to God. It was actually coming from a very serious religious life. He was a very dedicated religious person. Your typical religious fanatic, you may say, who was out to nail anyone around who he thought was acting outside of God's ways. But God showed him that he'd had it all wrong in his approach in all of this. He was committed, but it showed that he didn't really know God for who he really was, and so he wasn't really representing God very well in the world. But God intervened and he revealed himself to Paul through that dramatic encounter with the risen Jesus. And what was revealed to Paul from then on, it changed everything for him, for this committed religious man. He came to see that all his efforts and his dedication in his old religious life had completely missed the mark somehow. And a new life was opened up for him that was based on nothing at all that he could do. But it rested completely in the goodness and the kindness of God that was shown towards him. It was a life immersed in the grace of God. The new life Paul experienced in this, it gave him not only a renewed passion for God, but it also gave him a real passion for people that seen him travel all over the place to spread this message and what he'd experienced. He wanted everyone he could reach to get the opportunity to experience this new life with God that he'd been given. And he believed it was a life that anybody could have if they'd simply turn from whatever life they were living in, whether it was religious or otherwise, and simply trust in the goodness of God. But as good as all this was for Paul, it didn't mean the world around him suddenly became all flowers and butterflies. If anything, getting a taste of the life that God always intended for us in this world, it probably only highlighted for Paul just how far the world had actually fallen from that intended purpose. And in the opening chapter of Romans, Paul describes quite vividly the utter mess of the world and state that the world finds itself in now. Instead of people loving one another as God intended, the world had become a place where people only abused one another. Paul lists several things
types of abuses like sexual abuses and physical and bullying and greed and people cheating one another, all in this opening chapter of Romans. It paints a picture of a world that had lost touch with its humanity, where no one had any solid reason to value anyone, even themselves. And we all feel the effects of things that are happening in the world around us. I've found Facebook, of all places, an interesting tool to gain some insight into how people are feeling about things that are happening in the world and people's reactions to those, to the things around. You may be one that thinks that Facebook is what's wrong in the world today, and you might be justified in some of those feelings, but I do really find it quite fascinating to see the different things people are reacting to. It gives people a bit of a public platform to express their feelings over things, and like some of it's quite positive, but people do find a place within that space to express their anger and their frustrations at certain things also. And I see different patterns emerging in that, in different people that I'm connected with on Facebook, my friends on Facebook. So some of my friends will be reacting to and expressing their frustrations with political things like gay marriage proposals, and some of them will be experiencing those same feelings about Muslims and refugees entering into the country and all that sort of stuff. And there's a lot of expression about those things coming through from certain groups of people. But yet I'll have other friends also who will be voicing their support for marriage equality in complete opposition to the other side, and yet be on their side with calling for the heads of all Muslims and all that as with as much passion as what their oppositions are on the other side with things. And then I've got other friends again that will be voicing their support for both gay rights and Muslim refugees, but they all find something to be angry about. Everyone's expressing their frustrations about something. On the one hand, I look at this and I feel as though I have quite a diverse range of friends in that space. And I like that, all voicing different opinions about different things. But then I stand back from it all and I wonder if everyone's all that different after all. Because in the midst of all of that, it does seem that most people do have at least one thing in common. It seems that everyone is pointing their finger at someone about something. It puts us all in a pretty volatile place with one another, doesn't it? With everyone pointing their finger at everyone else, we must be wondering, who's pointing their finger at me? In this passage that we heard from, which Christine read for us earlier, Paul says something along the lines in that our finger pointing can often be our way of diverting attention away from ourselves, a way of us taking the focus off of ourselves and our faults that may become visible. And this might make sense for such a dog-eat-dog world that we live in. What doesn't make sense for Paul, though, as he expresses in this passage, is for it to be coming out from those who have been given this new life based on nothing but God's gracious and loving kindness towards them. We see in the opening parts of this letter, in the opening chapter, that Paul is certainly aware as anyone of the terrible things that are happening in the world and what people are doing to themselves and what they're doing to one another. And he lists things that everybody would probably become bothered by at least some of those things that he lists. And that's what Paul's doing there in the opening part of that letter. He's reaching into the heart and frustrations of the people that he's writing to. But as we continue on into the second chapter there and see where it was all leading to, we see that Paul's emphasis in all this is to show that no one has any place to put themselves above others and look down upon others in harsh judgment with the position and grace that's been shown to them. It's particularly if you're one who's been given this new life that he's talking about, that's been given to you not for anything you've done, but only because of who God is and how gracious he's been towards you. He says at the end of that passage we read, in kindness, he takes us by the hand and leads us into radical life change. How is it that God's kindness changes lives? I'd suggest one thing is that it acts in direct contrast to everything that's wrong in the world with the way that we're all treating one another. The terrible ways we treat one another, I'd suggest, probably comes out of our fears and our insecurities. We live trying to hide or divert the attention away from our own faults that we know people could possibly use against us if they wish, and they will use it against us as they too live out of their insecurity and their fears. But that's where God's kindness changes it all for us. Because he freely embraces, he embraces us and accepts us with all our faults. So there's no reason to hide these things from God, because they're simply not things that he uses against us, as others might. That acceptance and that grace of God, it moves us from that life that we're living out of insecurities, and it moves us or transfers us into a life where we are completely secure, simply in God's love. I consider myself pretty lucky that one of my most impressionable encounters with religious people wasn't really much like Roald Dahl's, and like many others. Maybe some of you have had similar experiences. But it wasn't quite 7 years ago that Sarah and I rocked up to the doors of this church when we were back in a tent back then. And this was a moment I can quite confidently mark down as a period of significant change for our lives and our family. And I'll put a major part of that, I've said this for years now, and I'll put a major part of that down to the acceptance that we experienced from people in the church. We had some rather unhealthy habits in our lives that we wanted to break free from but hadn't yet been able to. And I'm sure that some of the effects of those bad habits wouldn't have gone completely unnoticed by people in the church. But we were embraced anyway, just as we were, as we turned up. And I can't understate just the power that had for us and for our lives that began to change after that. It gave us a safe place, a secure place from which we were able to grow and start to see some of that positive change that we'd desired for so long. And what made it feel safe was that we didn't feel the pressure that we needed to be perfect to fit in with everyone else. We didn't feel the pressure to be perfect to fit in and be accepted. This might have helped somewhat, might have been helped somewhat by an incident that happened to us in the week following our first visit to the church. We'd driven up to Picnic Point one evening to have some fish and chips as we used to do back then. And as we pulled up into the car park, there was another family who'd pulled up about the same time as we did. And the wife who was driving, she must have parked the car a bit crooked in the park, because it was within the lines as far as I can remember, but it was obvious that the husband was inspecting the not-so-perfect park as he got out of the car. This really seemed to boil Sarah up a bit. She recalled to me saying that she was saying to herself, "I bet that so-and-so is going to say something to his wife." She was quite frustrated. Now, I'd say the reason that Sarah was so bothered by this is because it would have been just the sort of thing that I would have done to her as well. And the husband confirmed Sarah's suspicions as we heard him commenting on the park as we came up closer to them. And what was even funnier was the way the wife just ignored his comments as if she had heard it all before. So we come right up alongside this family with Sarah's blood boiling, and I could see it just walking next to her, over the husband's comments. When he turns around and he sees us and he goes, "Oh, hey, it's you guys." It was Chris and April, and some of the first ones that who so graciously accepted us at the church just a few days before. Why I say I think this may have helped a bit with our first connection with the church was that even that sort of encounter took the pressure off thinking we had to be perfect to fit in with it, because even the church people weren't perfect. They had their faults just like us. There's a point of connection there, because his wife was just as bad as mine at parking. No, but seriously, I have a real passion for this. I really do. A passion for what the power that lies even in a small church community that expresses that acceptance, that kind of acceptance that reflects God's grace toward us. It really does have the power to see lives changed. This church, it's changed quite a bit since we first rocked up 7 years ago, and we have a lot of different people now with us and quite a diverse group of people too. And I get excited to see the change and the new things that God is doing among us as a church all the time. But I do hope to see that one thing remain there, is that grace and acceptance that we got to experience when we first come here. I'd even like to see us grow further in that, grow more in some of those ways. Because as diverse a group as we have here now, I do believe it's only the tip of the iceberg for what God intends for us as a community, as a people who are called to reflect and reveal that nature of God's love and grace to the community around us. I think we can really be a place that can begin to see that too in the future. Because that's the basis of our mission here in the Highfields area, or wherever you find yourself throughout your weeks or whatever. It's to reveal God to those around us through what God is doing in us and through us. We don't have to be perfect to do that. I think it actually helps for people to see we're okay with not being perfect. Because that reflects the security, really reflects that security that can be found in God's grace. But that security should come out also in our ability to love and accept others as they are too. That's our message. And our message, it's nothing more than the fruit of our experience with God. If God in His grace accepts us as we are, how can we turn around and treat anyone any different? Our mission for God, it's not so much a task that's required of us by God as much as it is simply an expression, a natural expression of our experience of God and what He's stirring and changing in us. It's a genuine experience that'll ultimately give us a genuine message to take to people. Thanks, guys.